Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, in 2005, Jay Allison and Dan Gediman revived the 1950s Edward R. Murrow radio series, This I Believe. You've heard it on this radio station on Weekend Edition and All Things Considered. Almost 50,000 people all over the world have submitted essays, and now there's a new book of collected credos called This I Believe 2, More Personal Philosophies of Remarkable Men and Women. And the host of the series, Jay Allison, is with us this morning. Jay, welcome back to WNYC.
How are you, Brian?
Good, thank you. And over the last few days, as you know, we have asked our listeners to contribute mini essays, and we will be joined later by one of them who will read her essay on the air.
Oh, good.
I want to start with a recording the material from one of the essays in the new book. This is Studs Terkel, the great Studs Terkel, born back in 1912, which makes him 96 by my calculation. Mm-hmm. He is Pulitzer Prize-winning oral historian who moved to Chicago shortly before the Great Depression. He hosted a Chicago radio program for 45 years and has authored 12 oral histories about 20th century America. Here is Studs Terkel talking to This I Believe.
My own beliefs, my personal beliefs, came into being during the most traumatic moment in American history, the Great American Depression of the 1930s. I was 17 at the time, and I saw on the sidewalks pots and pans and bedsteads and mattresses. A family had just been evicted, and there was an individual cry of despair multiplied by millions. But that community had a number of people on that very block who were electricians and plumbers and carpenters, and they appeared that same evening of the eviction, and moved these household goods back into the flat where they had been. They turned on the gas, they fixed the plumbing. It was a community in action, accomplishing something. And this is my belief, too, that it's the community in action that accomplishes more than an individual does, no matter how strong he may be.
96-year-old Studs Terkel on This I Believe, talking about his belief in community action in the Depression, or with the story coming from the Depression. Jay, it seems eerily relevant to what we're going through today.
It does. You know, this series started in the 1950s, and so many of the essays from the past are current or prescient or contemporary. You know, we keep going through the same kinds of trials and tribulations, whether it's a depression-like circumstance or questioning patriotism of your neighbor or America's place in the world or questions of race and immigration. They just keep circling around, and they're there for us always to reckon with, and they are matters of belief.
And, of course, Studs Terkel recorded that before the financial crisis started.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious what kinds of essays people have been writing to you just these last few weeks, because, you know, the series is meant to tap into people's core beliefs that presumably don't change very much. But I know you've had a history of also very much reflecting how those beliefs intersect with the times.
That's right. The series began soon after 9/11, or a couple years after, and at that point, that informed a lot of people's beliefs, which were shaken by that event and recalculated. Katrina brought in a number of essays that we aired. The financial crisis, I would say that the latest, most precipitous events have not sponsored a great deluge of essays, but mm-hmm. certainly the decline over the last year has. We had a remarkable essay from a young high school student in California she and her mom had started shopping at the gas station because that's the only place that she still had a credit card that worked. Mm. And that was about a belief in flexibility and the embarrassment of having to do that and being seen by her friends buying groceries at the Chevron station. But it was a lovely essay. And I have to say, public radio listeners stepped forward after they heard that essay, and they set up a virtual endowment to send that girl to college.
I guess so. Well, as I said, over the last few days,
a community in action.
We have asked our listeners to contribute many This I Believe essays through our website, and then we were going to pick one for today's show. And so we are joined by one of those listeners, Isan Kim from Plainfield, New Jersey. Isan, welcome. Thanks for contributing.
Hello, Brian.
Do you want to set up what you're going to read, or do you want to just go?
I can set it up a little bit. I was concerned about the first 100 days of our next president and how they had a lot of challenges, because if they didn't produce results, both candidates would have a host of criticism. And I thought that that was really unfair, because there are monumental challenges this country faces. And so that was my mindset as I developed this piece.
Looking forward to it.
I believe that the future success of America goes beyond electing either Obama or McCain as president. The strength of this nation really depends on some good old-fashioned humility. I teach college freshmen, and every term, an ever-increasing number of students expect high grades for substandard work. They expect a reward without the effort. This classroom experience seems to parallel the way our nation's citizens view our political leaders. As I prepare to vote in the upcoming election, I am wary of the idea that a new U.S. president will be the sole solution to this country's problems. If I want an improvement to my life, I must be willing to earn it. Instead of placing so much responsibility on my elected officials, I turn inward and ask myself, how can I be smarter with my money? What can I do about crime in my neighborhood or the failing local public school? Such neighborhood commitment can truly produce nationwide results. I believe that if I roll up my sleeves and invest more energy and effort into my local community, perhaps that's the most valuable contribution I can make as a citizen this year.
That's great, Isan. So, okay, are you following through on your own words? Are you actually volunteering?
I am. I've done some research. I'm also, in addition to being a writer and an instructor at a local college, mm-hmm. I have looked into volunteering with some cancer patients and sewing and creating some caps for chemotherapy patients who've lost their hair.
Mm, that's great. And it's, you know, people don't even want to look past the election. If my candidate gets in, then, you know, then things are going to be better. And I think you hone in on such an important thing. We almost forget sometimes to take responsibility outside of the political sector for doing things in our communities. And sometimes we place too much hope, even on hope-inspiring candidates.
Yes, and I noticed with some of my colleagues and peers that they seem to be waiting for the election results, just sitting around and waiting. And I felt something wrong with that, that there really should be, I mean, the moment is now. The moment is to look around and really see what we can do.
And after the election, in any case, then comes the hard part. So, Isan Kim, thank you very much for submitting to This I Believe. That was great, Jay, wasn't it?
You know what? One thing I like about that thought and the way it's framed is it is very much in the I. a lot of times people will write these essays more as sermons than prayers, and they'll use the we, you know, we must do this. And in a way, you're kind of hiding when you do that. What you're really saying is you must do this. And the essays are best when people really own these things and say, I got to do this. This is what it's not about convincing somebody else. It's not about advice. It's about a kind of personal mission statement.
Here's another one that somebody submitted. They couldn't come on today, so I'm just going to read this myself. I believe that I do not trust anyone that does not like Prince. Not because I am an avid fan or a delusional music dork, but because someone who does not like Prince does not respect the word fun. This is a practical belief and a perfect deal breaker when online dating. Think about Prince's music. It's a comprehensive guide to mature sexuality, urban and suburban fantasy, while remaining playful, relevant, and funky. Anyone who tells you that they do not like Prince is bound to be someone to run from at a party, fall asleep on in a conference room, or tune out on a blind date. This may sound strange, but think about it. Would you trust someone that doesn't like Prince? Jay, would you?
You know, with all due respect to you, Brian, I'd like to have heard the writer read that. I'd like to have heard the zealotry in his voice. Where's he from?
I let's see if I can pull that up. From New Jersey is all I have. the big white, the big white, some from somewhere in the big white state of New Jersey.
Well, he's not fooling around, though. He's, you know, you can tell he's convinced.
Let's play another one from you from the This I Believe series. This is from Barbara Held, a professor of psychology and social studies at Bowdoin College in Maine, and the author of Stop Smiling, Start Kvetching. I have a feeling she doesn't like Prince, but listen to this.
Many Americans insist that everyone have a positive attitude, even when the going gets rough. The problem is, this demand for good cheer brings with it a 1-2 punch for those of us who cannot cope in that way. First, you feel bad about whatever's getting you down. Then you feel guilty or defective if you can't smile and look on the bright side. I believe that there is no one right way to cope with all the pain of living. As an academic psychologist, I know that sometimes a lot of what people need when faced with adversity is permission to feel crummy for a while, to realize that feeling bad is not automatically the same as being mentally ill. Some of my one-session cures have come from reminding people that life can be difficult and it's okay if we're not happy all the time. Having flourished in my own authentically kvetchy way, I believe that we would be better off if we let everyone be themselves, positive, negative, or even somewhere in between.
Barbara Held, with a deeply held belief as expressed through the This I Believe series. This I Believe, producer Jay Allison with us. You can hear This I Believe on All Things Considered and Weekend Edition here on WNYC. That's, you know, that's a politically incorrect thought, isn't it?
Well, you know, the series is supposed to, all beliefs need to be affirmative. It's one of the original rules from the Edward R. Murrow series. But people find ways to finesse that, as you can hear. I mean, you can affirm a belief and not being affirmative, I suppose. Penn Jillette wrote one of the more viewed essays in the series, I Believe There Is No God. And so he managed to make an affirmation out of a non-belief.
Yeah, I mean, I remember someone wrote an essay around the beginning of the Iraq War that was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but along these lines, saying, you know, I go to my therapist and say I'm depressed about the state of the world. They want me to take Prozac, but I tell them, no, 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 you don't understand. The world is really in deep trouble. And,
yeah.
You know.
And well, Barbara Held's full essay, that was an excerpt. She talked about when she became very ill and everyone sort of told her to buck up and cheer up. And it was a therapist who said, don't do that. Just go ahead and feel what you feel and let it be as bad as it is. You're terrified. You don't have to do anything other than be terrified. And it was liberating for her. She felt like, okay, that's the way I'm going to handle it. And she was able to, as opposed to being, I guess, doing the politically correct thing and being cheerful.
Do these work in print? Because obviously they work so well when you hear the reader. And you have collected these in a new book called This I Believe Too, More Personal Philosophies of Remarkable Men and Women. And I wonder if you can, you know, just say why you think they work as a book.
Well, I think they're born in print. I mean, all these essays get sent to us. You know, we've now gotten over 50,000. They come in through the website, which is thisibelieve.org. And and you can see them all there if you've got a minute. But people think through writing. Often they'll sit down and they'll even tell us, I didn't even know what I was going to say till I began to write. And the act of writing is sometimes what clarifies the belief. And then I work with them and to help them speak it in their own voice. And then they go back into print in the book. And I think the book is wonderful because they're all there together. You can hold them in your hand. They're arranged alphabetically, the famous people with the non-famous, shoulder to shoulder. And in a way, they're almost having a conversation with each other and with you.
If you have a minute, you said, we could go to your website and see how many This I Believe essays?
50,000. A little more than that, more, you know, a couple hundred more every day. And you can submit one of your own if any of your listeners want to. We really hope they will. We read them all. But, you know, you could go type in New York and see all the essays from New York, or you could see all the essays from people under 18, or there are a whole lot of ways to parse the data. But, yeah, it's like a graduate student's dream.
And here's a short one that somebody just posted on our website. It says, I hate Prince. Guess that says it all. But another slightly longer one.
See, we don't allow commenting on our website for that
Really?
Reason.
Just the essays.
Yeah, just if you want to respond to an essay, you got to write one of your own.
Right, or have a conversation with yourself.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what it's about, listening. It's not about firing back.
Here's an interesting, different kind of thing that came in on the site. It says, I believe in certain immutable physical laws as they are experienced on Earth, namely gravity, and that the effort to resist gravity through one's own meager physical system, unaided by motors, is essential to our collective health and survival. Real American independence involves reconnecting with the simple physical task of walking home across a snowy field, or biking, or walking to work instead of taking the Porsche Cayenne, and having strength enough to build solar panels or to lift invalid veterans off their bedpans on a volunteer basis. To contribute with so much less, even on a simple physical level, is the enormous opportunity that this economic downturn affords us. The body is a cage. It is also the route to our collective freedom. Isn't that interesting?
It was an interesting one. I'm interested that he or she suggests it's an American attribute to overcome gravity, but I still think sometimes the metaphors are the things that really kind of cut through and make you think about things in different ways. I think back to an essay we had not long ago about a belief in mending, and it was really about mending clothes, but then it expanded to mending relationships, and that when you take the time to repair things, they maybe are sometimes even stronger than they were when they were new. And it makes you think in different ways when you find a simple task you believe in and then realize how maybe significant it is in a larger way.
Yeah, and in that case, turning something that's not a matter of belief but a matter of fact, which is gravity and the immutable physical laws in general, as the writer put it, and turning that into a belief essay. I thought that was really good. All right, we want to
end. Yeah, suggest they send that in to our website. We'd like to take a look at it.
All right, you heard that, whoever posted it, because that just came in a little while ago. We wanted to end with an essay that looks to the future. This is from your collection, but you've actually helped us get the individual who wrote it to come on with us.
Oh, good.
Live, and that is Josh Rittenberg, who contributed this essay when he was 16, 3 years ago. He grew up in Manhattan and is now a student at the University of Pennsylvania, and he joins us on the phone this morning in Pennsylvania to read his essay. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for doing this with us, and I'm going to let you just dive right into the essay, then we'll talk.
Thank you. I'm 16. The other night, while I was busy thinking about important social issues, like what to do over the weekend and who to do it with, I overheard my parents talking about my future. My dad was upset. He sounded like this. There will be a pandemic that kills millions, a devastating energy crisis, a horrible worldwide depression, and a nuclear explosion set off in anger. As I lay on the living room couch, eavesdropping on the conversation, starting to worry about the future my father was describing, I found myself looking at some old family photos. I considered some of the awful things my grandparents and great-grandparents had seen in their lifetimes. 2 world wars, killer flu, segregation, a nuclear bomb. But they saw other things, too. Better things. The end of 2 world wars, the polio vaccine, passage of the civil rights laws. They even saw the Red Sox win the World Series. Twice. I believe that my generation will see better things, too. That we will witness a time when AIDS is cured and cancer defeated, when the Middle East will find peace and Africa grain. Ever since I was a little kid, whenever I've had a lousy day, my father would put his arm around me and promise me that tomorrow will be a better day. I challenged my father once. How do you know that? He said, I just do. And I believed him. My great-grandparents believed that, and my grandparents, and so do I. As I listened to my dad talking that night, so worried about what the future holds for me and my generation, I wanted to put my arm around Tim and tell him what he had always told me. Don't worry, Dad. Tomorrow will be a better day. This, I believe.
That was great, Josh. So there, you take it all, you old people who say the world is going to pot. You and yours are going to make it better.
Yeah.
So you wrote that 3 years ago when you were 16. What do you think now?
I think that I still absolutely feel the same way. I mean, a lot of people, you know, they come to me and they talk to me and they assume that it's an idealistic essay and that as I get older, I'll become less idealistic. But, you know, there's a difference between, you know, pie-in-the-sky idealism and a genuine understanding that if history is filled with examples of our having faced some terrible problems, that history, it's also filled with examples of our having resolved these problems. You know, sometimes we stumble, sometimes we fail. You know, but I believe that, you know, there will always be men and women of intelligence and faith who will help us to ultimately right ourselves. And, you know, I mean, to answer the question, yes, yeah, I still feel that way. I always will.
And Josh Rittenberg, we're going to give you the last word because that was great. Jay Allison, thank you very much. The new collection.
Thank you, Brian.
The new collection.
And good to hear you, Josh.
Good to hear you, Jay.
This, I believe, too. More personal philosophies of remarkable men and women. And it comes with audio recordings of each essay read by each author. And you can see some of the ones that your fellow WNYC listeners are posting on our webpage right now. Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The print download is not mandatory. Stay tuned.